Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSHD Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSHD Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of people affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSHD Society Radio.
Buongiorno.
Buongiorno, Lee.
We are recording this while we are in Italy. We have just, we are in the middle, towards the end of a whole bunch of important meetings where we are bringing the entire world together to discuss FSHD and move things forward. And so I've asked my fine colleague, Jamshid Arjmand, PhD, Chief Science Officer of the FSHD Society. This is Lee Reynolds filling in for Tim. You're probably wondering, where's Tim? He's not here in Italy and he's busy. So sadly, you're stuck with me as the makeshift host once again. But we thought it'd be great to bring you all a little up to speed of all the great things that have been happening while we're here in Italy. It's not one, not two, but three separate meetings, right?
It is.
Bringing the entire world together. So let's just start at the very beginning. The first meeting, if we can remember that far back, it feels like a month ago, but it was just a few days ago, we started with the Industry Collaborative. So for those that have no idea what the Industry Collaborative is, let's start there, just so folks know what that is.
Really good. So the Industry Collaborative meeting is something we started about 4 years ago in 2019, about the time that I joined the society. And the idea was to bring the pharmaceutical companies that are working on FSHD together so we could talk about the common theme bottlenecks that they may be facing and trying to see, can we develop some solutions for them that everybody could benefit, because that would accelerate drug development. And so based on the first meeting, we came up with this therapeutic accelerator. Okay. And we bunch of bottlenecks that we thought we could solve on our own. So like the society started putting together projects that then were tried to solve. And that was part of the therapeutic accelerator. And some of them we succeeded, like the voice of the patient was one of those things that we needed to do. And we did it. Thank you very much for everybody who participated in that. Now we are, some of the bottlenecks are things that are a little bit bigger than we can do on our own. So what we were really focusing here were these things where we can't do it on our own, and we actually need industry to form an alliance.
Okay.
And hopefully through a collaborative network, we can try to solve them. And so the therapeutic accelerator were smaller projects. Now we're looking at bigger projects. And so we are trying to create this FACT alliance.
Okay.
And the FACT alliance stands for FSHD Assessment and Clinical Tools Alliance.
Excellent.
So the FACT Alliance are these bigger projects where we really need industry as a group to kind of come to consensus, and they will benefit from it because not every group can do everything. Nobody has unlimited time, unlimited resources. So this is where collaboration really comes in handy.
So is it normal for pharmaceutical companies to collaborate in this way?
You know, there's some really good precedents for that. So when I was in graduate school, in Alzheimer's disease, all these pharmaceutical companies started pooling money together, and they were, MRI technology was brand new, and they started scanning the brain of people, and they were going to do this longitudinally because you don't have a biomarker, you don't have a diagnostic for Alzheimer's.
Okay.
People start with some mild dementia and forgetfulness, and over many, many, many years, they start losing memory. So that was one of the first ones I'm aware of. There may have been earlier ones. Where they collaborated together and they funded like longitudinal scanning of aging population, only a handful of which will develop Alzheimer's. But basically, if you can catalog them, then you can see what's happening in the brain over time. That was the first one, and I thought it was really incredible.
I think that's awesome. In some of the other disease spaces I've worked in over my career, I found that's not always the case.
It is not.
I think there can be some proprietary concerns, and there's some firewalls they put up. So I think it's pretty awesome that we've managed to, not some, most or all, really want to be a part of this the collaboration.
Yeah, and there's still proprietary stuff. Not talking, they're not sharing drugs, they're not sharing any of their patent. What they're doing is these are the hurdles that they need to overcome to take their drugs through a clinical trial. So the hurdles are going to be the same for everybody because they're all working on FSHD. The hurdles between like FSHD and another disease, another neuromuscular disease like Duchenne, are going to be different.
So
we're trying to figure out, you know, what are the common hurdles that we can work together as a team in a collaborative manner.
So was there anything unique or different or any big takeaways? I know it's early. We just haven't had a chance to process our thoughts. What was unique or different or exciting about this year's industry collaborative?
I had a plan in my mind. This one was a little bit different than other ones. So we're trying to launch this FACT Alliance. And so the meeting started with me explaining, most of the companies were already familiar with what the FACT Alliance is. I'd already shared that with them. Mm-hmm. But I kind of wanted to give a reminder. I started with that. But the goal really, the purpose of these projects that now we're considering are clinical assessment tools. These are the kind of tests that in a clinical trial, you want to see has the disease progressed or not. Okay. And to develop these, there's a natural evolution and a maturation of, so usually let's pick reachable workspace as an example. I think people might be familiar with that. Mm-hmm. This is where you sit, the volunteer sits in front of a machine. Basically, it's like a video camera. It's a Kinect gaming console, and you're asked to move your arm up, or you move your arm to the side, move your arm below, and there's four quadrants, and the computer takes measurements. And over time, there is, in FSHD, there's a slight decline on how much you can move your arm. And so this is an assessment tool, right? And so usually these things are developed in a lab by somebody, a scientist that's very smart, and they do a small study looking at patients that are at different stages of their disease progression. This is called a cross-sectional study.
Okay.
The next step, after if there's something that works, the next step is you do it longitudinally. You look over time, and for each person, you see, can you measure a decline? Is there an average decline that then you can measure? And that gives you confidence. This is still a small study. It's done at one site. So the same person is giving the instruction. The challenge in the trial is that it's going to be over multiple sites. So can you take that test, deploy it in like 5 or 10 different centers, and get a very similar rate of decline measurement? And so you go from a single site cross-sectional to a single site longitudinal to a multi-site longitudinal, and then it's going to be implemented in a clinical trial. So with Reachable Workspace, Fulcrum put it as one of their assessment tools in their phase 2 study in Redux 4. They saw something that they liked, so now they're putting it as a primary outcome measure in their phase 3, in their REACH study. That's why it's called REACH, because it's Reachable Workspace, it's a primary outcome. So, but, you know, Reachable Workspace may work, may not work, so we don't know that. So there's interest in trying to develop other tools.
Okay.
So what we did is, we had 3 different outcomes assessments that were being presented. So we had technical experts on the platform that came and gave presentations to the industry participants. So the first one was remote assessment. Remote assessments are like the wearables, digital health type stuff. And so we had presentation from one of them.
Okay.
And they kind of did a demo. And then we had Dr. Stablin give an overview of all the other types of technologies that are out there. And some of them, there's been, you know, a small cross-sectional study. So 10 people, they've just looked at people at different stages of disease progression. There's just a little bit of data there. And then they presented on where can we deploy this? How can we test a whole bunch of these in parallel? And there is this natural history study called MOVE that's going on now. And this is the kind of place where you can deploy a couple of these remote assessment tools to see, you know, do they show a signal? Is there something worthwhile measuring? So you can set some very clear go, no-go decision points, test them out for a little while. If they're good, you can then take them to the next level. So that was the first thing. The next topic was pediatrics. So what we were trying to do there was, what do we know about pediatric natural history? And so there we have a little bit more, it's a little bit more advanced. There's been a couple of studies that are been longitudinal, but they're at single sites with very small number of participants. So we have an idea about what natural history in kids might look like, but we really need a multi-site study that involves a lot of kids. So Dr. Statlin, again, kind of they gave a, actually this was, we had this Australian group and that gave a phenomenal overview of what's been done mm-hmm. historically. And then Dr. Statlin presented a proposal where we could start up broad natural history over many sites involving between 50 and 60 participants. And that's the most advanced one because we already have some natural history. We know what kind of measures to deploy that. And then the last topic was imaging. MRI has really come a long way. There's a ton of longitudinal data at different sites, but they've all been analyzed differently. And none of them have, you know, it would be really great if we could pool all of these expensive images from the different sites. There's some in Italy, there's some in the US, there's some in the Denmark, in France. If we can pull all of these images together and reanalyze them in a standardized way, there's a wealth of information and stuff that we can learn. So that's basically what the industry meeting.
So what I think is personally, for me, it's particularly exciting because I get the pleasure of working with our early onset group and our chapter, and Allie's just worked so hard to bring families and parents of younger kids with early onset and infantile FSHD together and really advocate and fight for it. And have we ever talked about pediatrics or early onset much like we did today or this week?
No, actually, this was kind of an unofficial theme of the whole meeting was pediatric FSHD.
That's pretty exciting.
It is.
And I think our families probably had a little bit of fun to do with that.
Oh, absolutely. And the video that was shown that hopefully people will see.
We have actually shared it on our social media accounts. So when we post the show, we'll share the link to that if you missed it. It is an incredibly powerful video that Allie and Kristen, who are the co-leaders of our early onset group, put together that shows the progression of their kids, and their kids are in it. And it's just, Sam's not so much a kid anymore, just graduated high school, but very compelling. Their words, their story, direct to industry. And then we also played it at the IRC, we'll get to in a minute. Yep. But I felt like it was a very poignant moment in the day where everyone maybe hasn't heard so much from the pediatric families, and we were able to bring their voice forward to this group.
That's very true. And part of the reason pediatric manifestation is more rare than adult, and there are less experts in pediatric mm-hmm. that study it. So actually the Australian group that was here, a couple of neurologists, were telling me that they really enjoyed for the first time their work was being highlighted. Mm.
So that's pretty exciting. So we still have to sort of assess everything and pull it together and decide what next steps are. But I think suffice to say there were some pretty great conversations and connections and brainstorming in the white space. So in summary, industry collaborative successful.
In my mind, it was very successful. I think that I debriefed with a lot of the companies that were there, and they saw the picture of what Excellent. We were trying to do. And so they have to take that information back to their team and see, you know, what is their priority. And hopefully all, you know, yep. some of these are going to be a priority for them, and they'll form. So not everybody will participate in every group. Yep. I right. never expected that because there are different stages of development for their drugs. So they may not be thinking ahead, like we're okay. going to need this until a little while. But there was interest in all of the topics. And there should be. The topics came from industry.
Right.
We talk to them and we say, what do you think you need to solve?
What do we need to solve? What do we need to talk
and
about?
So they help us, and then forward. We bring the right people to this meeting. They present a plan, and it should resonate and with the groups that asked for it.
So, excellent. Yeah. Okay, that's exciting. So that was the first meeting. Then we go on to the second meeting, which is the International Research Congress. We alternate on that one, right? So we were in the States last year. We're here in Italy this year. Next year, we'll be back in the States in Denver. How long do you know how long we've been doing the IRC?
You know, I didn't know this until I saw the program book that I have here. It said 30th. It was the 30th meeting.
Oh, wow. We should have done anniversary celebrations. That's very exciting. So for 30 years now, the IRC, I know that just from when I started with FSHD just a handful of years ago, it has grown tremendously. I think it's more folks are here. It's more engaging. I shouldn't say more engaging. I don't know that. I'm just, to me, it seems like there's more people attending and there's a great interest in having these conversations with the IRC. So let's move on to that.
Yeah.
What was the focus of the IRC? And let's talk about what are some of the big takeaways from that?
Yeah. So let me go one step back. So I think in 2019, or again, the year that I came, my colleagues, actually it was June probably that spearheaded it. She, you know, we call it the International Research Congress, but it's kind of like the World Championship at football.
Yeah.
Only Americans play in it. The meeting was always in the U.S. And I think there was an opportunity to take the meeting abroad and truly making it a truly international meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So we did it in 2019 in France, and then something like COVID happened. And so we stopped doing the meetings in person. Yeah. But last year was our first in-person meeting, and we were in Florida, in Orlando. And so this year we wanted to come back to Europe. And so we're in Milan, Italy. But the benefit of that is that travel is expensive and it's difficult.
Yeah.
And so when we have it in the US, it gives the American scientists an advantage, and you get really American perspective on the research.
Mm-hmm.
When you come to Europe, you get way more European scientists participate. And so you get, you know, broader exposure of the type of research that's being done. And now, because of COVID, we're hybrid. So we have participants from places where maybe travel is almost impossible or cost prohibitive. And I have to say that a lot of the credit for this meeting goes to our committee. This was probably the most diverse committee that we've ever had.
That's fantastic.
And we have participants from a lot of places. So first of all, we had a committee member from Turkey. So Turkey has a very active FSHD research group, which I wasn't aware of until I started going to a couple of European meetings. They can travel to Europe. It's easier for them to get to Europe. Half their country is there. But to kind of see that they're doing some amazing work. They've done a lot of scapular surgeries over there. So they have like an expertise center over there. So we had a clinician from Turkey be part of the steering committee for this. We had presentations from China. So, you know, they're doing a lot of research in China as well. And so that's really exciting. So as I mentioned, the unofficial theme of the meeting was pediatrics. And the meeting started out with a patient testimony.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always really critical because a lot of researchers that work in the lab have not met patients before.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of given that perspective of what you're working on, this is why you're working for it. And we had just this amazing presentation from Jaya, who is a college student working medical engineering, telling us about his life history and his diagnosis and what he's looking forward to. And so that was a really fantastic way of starting the meeting. Then we had a keynote speaker from Basil van Engelen, who has been leading for a while a lot of the work that's been happening in the Netherlands. So both on the research side, as well as on the clinical side. And what he wanted to really emphasize was, okay, you can do research in the lab and take it to the bedside, but there's a really important opportunity to learn from the bedside, from when you're interacting with patients, and take that, what you learn, back to the bench, back to the lab, so you can advance therapies and you can advance treatments and even guide, you know, not therapeutic, but, you know, better living for the patient, but you can take it back. And that was the theme of his talk, was translation and back translation.
Excellent.
So another thing that we did that was quite exciting with this meeting was typically we start with from basic research and we slowly work our way towards the clinic. So first day of the meeting, all the laboratory researchers are excited because you know, we're talking about things that they understand.
Right.
And then all the clinicians who attend the meeting are kind of like, well, this is too technical. I don't understand. And then on the second day, we start switching to clinical discussion, and all the researchers are like, yeah, I don't understand what's happening there. So again, the committee made that suggestion. It's like, why don't we mix it up a little bit? So we had research in the morning, clinics in the afternoon. And so there was a little bit of everything happening for everyone. And, you know,
That's great.
Quite exciting, the, you know, on the basic research. There was so much information. I brought the program with me just so I could kind of keep track of it. You know, we talked about new models. We talked about, ways that DUX4 could be, you know, maybe new therapeutic strategies. So this happens all happening in the lab. So these are maybe possibly novel points of intervention. So all exciting research happening there. And then, you know, on the more clinical side, you know, there were some discussions about possibly new biomarkers. So these are all, again, they're clinically based, but they have to be validated with larger cohorts. But exciting stuff about, you know, can you, besides MRI imaging, which is expensive, like, can you learn from other like methods like ultrasound? So there was a great study, a great talk about comparing ultrasound with imaging, MRI imaging, and do these overlap. So this would make it, and that was just day one. And then day two, we also had another keynote, and this time it was really exciting to bring somebody who has expertise in immunology, but in another, in the context of Duchenne's, not FSHD. And so Dr. Benedict Chazot came and gave a presentation on, you know, 20 years of work that she's been doing on explaining how the immune system not only helps in rebuild muscle, but also can contribute to a fatty replacement in the muscle. And so she's spent her whole career trying to describe this. And there were, you know, there are probably some parallels and lessons that we can learn. And sure enough, that following session, we had several talks on people starting in FSHD, looking at the immune contribution in FSHD pathology. That was really, really exciting. I thought that was, you know, it was amazing that FSHD is moving in that direction. Mm-hmm. And people are picking up that the immune system is contributing to disease and how we can maybe harness that to slow down disease progression. And then the final clinical session really was pharmaceutical companies giving us an update on their clinical trials. So as everybody probably knows, there's three ongoing clinical trials. So we heard from all of the companies. And we finished off with two presentations and two studies on pediatric FSHD, and then a panel discussion with all of the pediatric neurologists that work in the field and what they think needs to happen. And we even had participants from adult neurologists that see patients, pediatric patients. And, you know, there was really a lot of interest in, like, we need to learn more. Mm-hmm. And we need to have these bigger studies.
So I don't understand most of what is said at these meetings because I'm not a science person. I'm a marketing communications person. And I'm largely with managing the tech and all of that. But this is what I saw from a layman's perspective is every break, it was so hard to get them back in the room because they were enjoying the conversations. And people that in the beginning, you can kind of tell, I know who some of the clinicians are and some of the researchers are. And I checked everybody in. So I know who some of the new folks are. And to see the newbies or the younger investigators talking with the more seasoned clinicians and folks that said, I'm not sure I know much about this session, but by the end, they're walking across the room to talk to each other and pose questions and say, have you considered this? Have you thought of that? What's next for your research? How does this research translate to the clinic and vice versa? Even though I don't understand much of the topics of what they're talking about, what I do understand is human nature. And I do understand how people interact with each other. And what I saw through the 2 days were communication barriers breaking down and connections happening. And that's where creativity happens. That's where ingenuity comes from, is when people see things from a different perspective. So that for me is what was really exciting because I was outside looking in, watching it happen in real time and seeing people walk out the door at the end of the second day, planning to reconnect and talk with each other. And send each other things and keep moving things forward. And during every Q&A, there was, have you thought about, have you considered? And then that's an excellent point. And yes, we need to look into that, or that's what's next, or let's connect on that later. And so even though I don't understand the depth and the complexity of the topics they're talking about, I understood the magic that happened in the room.
Oh, absolutely. In-person meetings are just priceless because, you know, you see a scientist present their work and they're trying to present as complete of work as they can. And then you have people coming from a similar field, but maybe an adjacent field, like, have you thought about this? Like, could your hypothesis be strengthened if you did this? So the presenter gets valuable information and feedback on additional things that they should be doing and be looking into. The audience learns new stuff. And then during the breaks are absolutely critical. And this is why we had fairly long breaks. And I'm glad that, thank you to your technical expertise, we didn't run over and we didn't lose time with technical glitches. Everything went so smoothly. So people had that time to actually set up collaborations and talk more in depth. And that's actually some of the feedback that I got was, you know, the lunch breaks and the poster session being put together gave people about an hour and a half or more of time to look at science and talk about science and make plans to follow up with each other.
Yeah, I noticed little pockets of people in the lobby and on the patio out front and over dinner. Like, they just kept talking and like, oh, I want to get over and talk to that next person. So that's what I love. I love the communication, the collaboration, the new ideas that are being generated. Say, I can't enter much into the conversation, but I can watch what's happening. And to me, that's exciting. Yeah. And personally, because I've spent so much time working with Allie and Kristen on the early onset group and getting to know them more, I loved that energy and conversation was around the kids too.
Yeah. Absolutely.
There was a lot of energy and consideration given to our younger patients and families. And, you know, I'm going to give a shout out to Allie Rhodes and Sam and Kristen and Kate, because they've really carried the banner forward and in a really powerful way. Their voices on the video, which we showed again to the IRC, was excellent. And, you know, that's how we get stuff done, right? Is people raise their voices, people talk about what they care about, patients can move things forward. So to any of our patients listening and families listening, if you think, what can I say? What can I do? It all starts with one, and then you get the ball rolling, and then somebody else joins in with you, and really powerful things can happen. And then here we are in Milan with bringing basically the entire world together, because we had folks here and we had tons of folks online. I'm excited to see where we'll be any couple of years from now. You know,
let's recover from this.
Let's recover from
the next one.
Right, right. Very exciting. Any other like big broad stroke takeaways? More will come. For those that are wondering how do I get the nitty gritty and the details, we'll process all of this. There'll be stuff in the blog. June will do some write ups. There might be a paper, perhaps, that comes out of this. Maybe, you know, there's a lot more that will come, and we'll share a lot of that information and video clips and things like that. But these are just your high level takeaways as we wrap some things up here. Anything else about the IRC that was just really stuck out to you?
I thought it was great. We had a pretty full room. That room got very hot.
It did. Italians don't like to run their air. Like we Americans do. Got a little warm.
But people stuck through it. Like, everybody was there until the very end.
Pretty awesome.
And it was, you know, there were some heated discussions, but it was all very friendly, and it was for the benefit of the science.
Like, sometimes you need to wrestle with things.
Yeah.
You know, this was not everybody just sitting around agreeing with each other. There were different perspectives, different specialties, different viewpoints, and people were receiving of that and wrestling with it. And I think the science will be stronger because of it. So,
absolutely.
Excellent. So that's meeting number two. Meeting number three, which is technically by the time you all are hearing this, will be over. But as we're recording this, it's still going on. Today and tomorrow, Saturday, Sunday, we moved into the World Alliance meeting. So this is now where we bring our delegates, mostly patient advocacy organizations from across the entire globe. And we all come together for a day and a half. And we've shared recaps of the previous two meetings, so they all sort of know what's happening in with industry and in the science. But a lot of the discussion is about what can our patient advocacy organizations do to help industry, to help move the science forward, to ensure the clinical trials get filled. And so we're not done with that yet. We have a whole planning meeting that'll go on and a lot more work to be done. But I feel like this is a really great progression of three meetings, because we first talk to industry, what do you need? Then we talk to the scientists, what's happening? How do we keep moving it forward? And now we're talking to the patient organizations from all over the globe, and they're asking really smart questions and great interaction. We have some of the researchers are still around and industry is still around. So any thoughts just from today's first day with the World Alliance?
I really liked the conversation that happened between the industry representative and the patient group.
That was a great panel discussion.
And I think that the context there is that, a drug can be approved in one country, but then getting the drug accessible, make it accessible to the patient community,
right,
that's something that is really dependent, is country by country dependent.
Yes, every country is different. The approval process is different. Approval does not mean access.
Yeah.
So then you have to get payer systems, whether it's private or public or whatever, it's different in every country. And then even once you get through the payer system, that doesn't mean it can get prescribed and actually still get to patients. And that was fascinating to have that conversation and see for a lot of our delegates and leaders from organizations across the globe to come together and get more collective knowledge and understanding around that. And tomorrow, which will have already happened by the time you're hearing this, but as we wrap up the conference tomorrow, that's what we're going to spend the whole day on, is really brainstorming. Where is each organization in each country? Where are we in country? How robust is the patient organization? Sort of where are they on the continuum? And what can they do to continue to move things forward? Because so much of the discussion today was, what we really would be heartbreaking is to have a therapy that works, get approved in the next few years, and then have folks that just can't get it.
Yeah.
That would be horrible.
And the theme through just about all of these meetings is that the voice of the patient matters.
Absolutely.
Because it is the community that tells industry what they're looking for. And so the industry then starts developing drugs and developing the type of tests that are necessary to show that, to address the needs that improves the lives of the patients. It's the voice of the patient that the regulatory agencies need to hear about what's important to them. So when a drug kind of meets that expectation, they approve it. And it's the voice of the patient that's needed for the payer system, whether it's insurance companies, that this drug would help my life and would make my life easier or better and it stops the progression. And that's what they need to hear. So every single one of those things, it's the voice of the patient that's the common theme that really pushes things forward.
That's so true. And there was so much conversation and encouragement, both from the industry, the researchers, from everyone that said, that patient voice matters, the patient community matters. And for those of you that are active and engaged, it's sort of that each one bring one, right? Get out there and talk to your community, build up connections among FSHD patients and families. How do we all come together, help those that are on the fringes or think they can't do anything or don't want to talk about it? Understand that we need you now. We need your voice. We need your action. We need your insights and ideas. Every single patient matters. Every single patient's voice and perspective matters. And that's what the World Alliance organization, that's their piece, right? Is there to organize the patient communities from whatever part of the globe they're in, so that their voice is elevated and their input is heard, and we all move this thing together, collectively. And what we want: treatments and a cure for all patients everywhere. And it's going to take all of us working together. And I just now thought it's sort of like the bookend, right? So we started with the video from talking about the video that Allie and Sam and Kristen and Kate put together talking about pediatrics. And that started because we had a couple pissed off moms who said, I want you to know that my kids matter. Let's get them. Let's pay attention. And now we have real momentum and discussion. And we ended it with the World Alliance and everyone saying, whether you're the one representative from China or the one or two people we had from India, or some of our world organizations are pretty small. They're started by patients who put their hand up and said, I want to do something. And I want the voice of the patient to be heard in my country.
Yeah.
We all have a place and we all have a voice and it matters. What I did find interesting that I did not expect is many, many folks from many different countries said they are experiencing the same thing we are, which is getting younger patients involved, not the kids necessarily, but that 18 to 30 range. We need activists in all age ranges. So we now have the parent voice of our early onset pediatric patients starting to gain volume and collective energy. And we have our more advanced non-ambulatory patients that are really fighting for that, not even so much for themselves. We want the cure and treatments for them. We all do, but they seem to be fighting for the next generation even more than for themselves. And then we have this in the middle. It seems to be a bit of a challenge for all of
young adults
to get young adults active and engaged. Understandable. I think that you want to live your life, right? You don't want to be defined. You're busy, you're building your career, you're building your family. You don't want it all to be defined by this diagnosis. But I think for me, a takeaway was if we could all help those folks find each other and come together and recognize their voice has tremendous power, their insights really matter, their engagement in the research matters, even if it's just filling out surveys. We heard over and over again from a lot of professionals in the field that when you answer those surveys and you answer those questions and you do the longitudinal studies, and that really helps move things forward, and it matters. And that's a voice that we're not hearing this much of.
But it's building.
It's building.
Yeah,
absolutely. We have a new young professionals group. We have lots of groups online, and we're starting to get more and more energy. So all of that to say, that's my encouragement to all of you is, each one, bring one or two or three or four, you know, find your younger friends and family members that are impacted by FSHD and let them know that they do have a voice and they do have power, and we need them in the fight with everybody else. So I am exhausted. I know you must be exhausted, but this has been a pretty exciting, pretty exciting week.
Definitely.
So, okay. Thank you for coming and sitting in with us. And we're doing this little interview recap, telling the world about it. Stay tuned on our blog and our website and read our emails for more to come, because the momentum just keeps building. There's lots to talk about.
Arrivederci.
Arrivederci.